So we are on
okay.
Subject, and we're off
yes.
to the first.
Yes. All right, so we read the Sedra of Miketz this week. And let's take up one area in particular. How did Yaakov Avinu respond to the terrible crisis in his family? The crisis which was exacerbated by the famine, certainly the original crisis, disappearance of Yosef, but then also the disappearance of Shimon. Shimon didn't return. So in fact, as the Torah starts in Parak Membez, Pasuk Aleph, Vayar Yaakov, Ki Yeshev B'Mitzrayim. Yaakov saw that there was grain in Egypt, so he said to his children, Blomot Yisra'u, why should you stand out? Stand out. Rashi says, Agavorcha, Lomot Tiratz Mechem B'fnei B'nei Yishmael U'Bnei Yisav, Ki Ilu Atem Sveim, why should you appear in front of the B'nei Yishmael B'nei Yisav as if you're satisfied, you have enough. You know, they're suffering from a famine, and you're not. Kibosa Shah Adain Hayalahem Tua. At that time, they still had grain. So why should you stand out? Which is a general musa, you know, Chazal say, not to show off. Jews should have a lower profile, because when we raise our profile, especially materially, it attracts the enmity of the nations of the world. He sends them down. We all know the story that takes place. Yosef sees them. He recognizes them. They don't recognize him. And he starts accusing them and questioning them, all to elicit not only information about their father and their guilt, but also to measure their personalities and the possibility of reconciliation. In years past, we discussed why he didn't confront them immediately. What would have happened? The consequences. They would have fled because they wouldn't be able to face their father, and in the end, he would have destroyed the family. He accuses them of being spies, and he takes one of them captive. Nevertheless, he sends them back to Canaan. Zos asu v'chiu, esolakim ani arei, and pasuk yutes, he says, we'll keep one, and you'll come back, v'sachichem akaton, taviu elai, you'll bring your younger brother back with me. And he gives them grain, and of course they don't know it at this time, but he puts the money back in their sacks as well. Now right away, at that moment, the brothers start having some harato. And Reuven says, Halo amarti alechem limar, I told you al techatu, vayeled v'lo shmatem. And they're all from people. They associated this calamity with some spiritual defect, some flaw in their personalities. He said, I told you, and now it's coming back to haunt us. And finally, in Pasuk Chav Tes, they return to their father. And let's see what happens. Vayavol Yaakov avihem arza kanan, vayagidu yifko akaroso samlemor. They came back to their father, told him everything that happened. Diber ish adonai ha'arti tano kashos. The man, the ruler of the land, spoke very harshly to us. Vayteno sonu kimeraglim es ha'aretz. You construed us as spies. Vanomer lov. We said to him, we protested. Keinim anachnu. We're honest. We're innocent. Lo hayinu miraglim. We're not spies. We're 12 brothers, all of us, sons of our father. One is gone. And the youngest one is today with his father in Canaan. And then Yosef says, and then they say to their father, the man said to us, Bezos eida kichinim atem. This will prove to me that in fact you're honest. Achichem ho'echad anichu iti, you'll leave one brother with me, v'esravon botechem kuchu v'leichu, you'll take sustenance for your families, v'haviu es achichem akaton elai, you'll bring your younger brother to me, and then I'll know that you're not really spies, you're people of integrity, es achichem etein lochem, I'll give you your brother back, v'esarz tischaru, and then you could circulate about the land. Now, Yaakov listens to this. They say to him, it's trouble. We're cross-examined by the ruler of the land about our family. We're accused of being spies. Shimon was taken. And now he's asked v'haviu et achichem hakatan. You'll bring your younger brother down. Bezos tibochenu. This is how I will test you. Now, he sent them grain, and vayehi pasuk lamed hey, hem merikim sakehem. They're emptying out their sacks. Vehinei ish tsar kasbo b'sako. Lo and behold, they find all the money they paid back in the sack. Vayiru tsaros kasbehem hem avavihem vayiru. They saw the money, and they and their father Yaakov became afraid. Vayomer alehem. Yaakov avihem. Yaakov said to them, Osi shikaltem, you've caused me to be bereaved. Yosef einenu, v'shimon einenu. Yosef is not here. Shimon is not here. V'ez binyamin tikachu. Now you'll take binyamin. Olai hayu chulono. All this is upon me. It's too much to bear. All right. Vayomer uvein el aviv lemor. Reuven says to their father, Eshnei v'nai tamis, you could put my two sons to death, imlo avienu elecho, if I don't return Binyamin to you. To know, so al yodi, give him to me, to my hand, v'ani ashiven elecho, and I'll return them to you. What kind of argument is that? Like Rashi says, Yaakov responds, lo yered b'ni machem, I'm not sending Binyamin with you. And Rashi notes, Lo kibel dvarav shel Reuven. He didn't accept what Reuven had to say. Bechor shota huza, my oldest, my firstborn is a fool. Hu omer lamiz banov, he says, he'll kill his two sons. What does he gain by that? Zechi banov heim, lo banai. So his sons are not my sons, they're my grandchildren. So what kind of offer is Reuven making? I'll kill my two sons. Even if it's hyperbole, it's exaggerated, it's foolish. So what is he really saying? On the other hand, what's Yaakov's plan? Yaakov has no plan. So what is he really saying? And then something else happens of interest. He says, I'm not sending Binyamin with you. Then Mem Gimel, Varov Kaved Baretz. The famine became heavier. And it seems that the brothers did not say anything to Yaakov from the first conversation until now. Beis, when the grain that they brought from Egypt was consumed, their father said to them, "Shuvu shivru lo matochel, go back and get some more grain." So, I mean, what happened in the interim? Yaakov knew they couldn't go back, so he just says, "Go back." The whole point was they're not going back because they would have had to bring Binyamin. He says it almost nonchalantly, "Shuvu shivru lo matochel." And even more than that, why did they make any effort to speak to him in the interim? So Rashi says, Yehuda Marlohem, Yehuda said after the first incident, Pasuk Beis, Hamtina Lazakein, wait for the old one. Asher Tichla Pasman Abayis. When there's no bread gone, he'll come around to his senses more. But we're talking about Yaakov Avinu here. We're talking about Yaakov Avinu, a great individual, tremendous wise man. He seems to have just reacted emotionally. Osi shikaltem, you bereaved me, I'm not sending Binyamin with you, and that's it. So what is his plan? No plan. And when in fact the grain is exhausted, he says to them, okay, go back now. Let me go back now. If they could have gone back so easily, he would have sent them months before. So what is he saying? Vayomer lo Yehuda lemor, as Yehuda says to him, no, ha'id ha'id banu ha'ish lemor, lo siru fanai bilti achichem etchem. Yehuda said, no, the ruler, swore he doesn't want to see us except if we bring your young brother. Im yeshchom yishalech esachinu itanu, if in fact you send, he had said, Yosef, you send your brother, then neredov inish brolachochel. Then we'll go down and we'll be able to find some more grain. V'imein chomish shaleach lo nered. If you don't go, lo nered. Then we're not going to go down. Ki oish amar eleinu lo siru fanai bilti achichem etchem. Because the man said to us, I don't want to see you. You will not see my face except if your brother is with you. Vayomer Yisrael. Ne Yisrael. No, it's not Yaakov. Ne Yisrael says to them, really sounds like he explodes. Lama hariosamli, why did you wrong me like this? Lahagid lo ish ha'u lochem och, to tell the man, do you have another brother? That's interesting. In the first conversation, the Torah doesn't say that Yaakov said, lo mo hari osem li, why did you wrong me? So he didn't even question them at any length about why they even said, why they mentioned Binyamin. So why does that arise now? It seems like everything Yaakov says here could have said the first conversation too. Vayamru, so they answered, no, Sha'ol Sha'alu Ishlanu Ulamolatenu Lemor, the men asked us about us, our birthplace. Ha'ud Avichem Chai, is your father alive? Hey, Yisrochem Och, is your brother alive? Vanaged lo apiyad vorma ele. So based on that, we answered him, and that's it. Hayadoa neida ki yamar haridu asachichem. Did we know, did we ever think, did we surmise that he would ask us to bring our brother down? So what is this added to the conversation? What bits of information does the Torah contribute here that Yaakov didn't know already? This seems to be just a repetition of the first conversation. And now Yehuda makes a deal, which is a little different than Reuven's, but doesn't sound that much better. Vayomer Yudal Yisrael Aviv, Shulchan Aritiv and Akuma Ben Elecha, send the young man with me, and we'll go. By the way, he's now, Binyamin is now 30 years old. He's a nar, he's the youngest in the family, but he's a nar. Send him with me. He has his own children too. He has 10 children by now. But to Yaakov, he's a little mini. V'nichye v'lo namus. And we'll live and not die. Gam anachnu, gam ata, gam tapenu. We, you, our children, we'll all live. Onochi ervenu. I will guarantee his return. Miyadit v'akshenu. You'll ask him from my hand. Im lo havi osiv elecho. If I don't bring him to you, v'itzaktiv levanecho. I stand him before you. Then I will have sinned before you all these days, all the days. Rashi says, all the days, the olam haba. I will sin, my sin will remain even in the next world, the world to come. Ki lulehis mamono, if we hadn't tarried, ki atos shavnu zefamayim, could have been back and forth twice since the first conversation. What does Yehuda really add? So now Yaakov answers. Okay. Vayomer Alehem Yisrael, Avihem, Im Kain, Efo, if so, Zosasu, this is what you should do. Kechumi Zimras Ores Bichleichem, take some of the best fruits of the land, Buridu Lishmencha, and bring the man a tribute, and bring him some of the Shavach Ores. And then you'll take some money, you'll repay him what somehow got returned to you the first time, and you'll pay him again for the second. Supply of grain, ulai mishgehu, maybe he made a mistake, and your brother you'll take with you, you'll bring him to the man, v'kel shakai, yitain lechem rachamim lefnei, and God should help you also. So what changed? What changed from the first story to the second story? From the first conversation to the second conversation? Why was there even a necessity for two conversations? We're talking about the great Chachamim here. Except for the passage of time, nothing else seems to be different. So then, why did Yaakov agree the second time and not the first time? Why did he dismiss contemptuously what Reuven had suggested, so contemptuously, by the way, and even answer him? When it says, Vayomer Reuven el Aviv, it doesn't say Vayomer Yaakov el Reuven. He just dismissed it, Vayomer. Lo yirei b'ni imochem, with you, he won't go down with you, plural, not with you, my b'chor shota. He didn't relate to what Reuven said. That's how ludicrous it was to Yaakov. And what is he really saying? At the first he says, osi shikaltem, which sounds very petulant. You know, you've caused me to be bereaved. How did they cause him to be bereaved? He didn't really know about Yosef. And Shimon didn't come back. I mean, something is happening. And then he says the second time, Lo Mahariosa. Lo Mahariosemli. Why did you wrong me? Well, what did they do? What did they do that's wrong? He already knew the story. So if he had that grievance, he could have raised it the first time. And why did they say, if you notice in the Pasuk Lamed Dalid, that the man just wants us to bring our brother down, Etachichem etein lochem, I'll give you back your brother Shimon, v'esaretz tischaru. And then you'll just be able to circulate the land like everyone else, like a good tourist. The fact is, Yosef never said that. He never said v'esaretz tischaru. He was quite clear what he wants. Bring your brother down, v'lo samusu, you won't die. Period. It's pasuk chaf in Perek Membeis. He never said he could just travel about the land, visit the pyramids and the Sphinx. He didn't say anything like that. So why did they say this to Yaakov? It wasn't true. Something you have to understand is, this heard from my Rebbe, Rabbi Chait, a nice approach that really gets to the heart of the psukim and the essence of the dialogue between Yaakov and his sons. So they're all great chachamim. Yaakov, of course, a greater chacham than his children, certainly at this point. But you see how people respond in a crisis, how a great man responds in a crisis, versus the brothers. Now, the brothers were great people, but they were suffering under a disability here, guilt. And so whatever they did has to be understood in the context of a cover-up, because they had one great crime, so-called crime. They didn't think it was a crime, but say one misdeed that was hanging over their heads, and they knew colored their father's perception of them. Now, they had one goal. When they presented the story to their father, they wanted to deflect any type of criticism from themselves, as well as any questions about any conduct that they had. So first, they did understate the gravity of the situation. So for example, if you look at the psukim, and we're medayik in the psukim, in the first conversation, do they ever say to their father that the man had said, don't come back without Binyamin? No, they never said that. All he said was, will you leave one brother here, I'll give you grain. You'll bring your brother and say, don't come without him. They just said, we'll bring him. And not only that, but at, what's the end of the pasuk? And then if you do that, I'll give you your other brother back. That's ours to Scharu. Why do they say that to Yaakov? Also to understate the situation. That they had a little imbroglio with this individual, a little argument, but it's not that serious. You see, we have the grain, Shimon is there, but he wants to see Binyamin. You know, just wants to meet the whole family. He's going to have business dealings, like a sort of a business lunch with all with the spouses there and the children there. We'll get to know them. And then he said, "Ves arts tischaru, you'll travel about the land as you wish." Why do they say that? Because they're trying to minimize the friction, trying to say it's not really anything that we did, but something with this person. He's a little unusual. But they never told Yaakov what Yosef said. And that is, don't leave home without him. Don't come back. That only comes later. That comes in Perek Mem Gimel when Yehuda starts talking. Ha'ed ha'id banu ishlemor lo siru fanai bilt yachichem etchem. He said, this month later, Yehuda tells Yaakov, by the way, he said, if you don't send Yosef, Binyamin, he doesn't want to see us. Now you understand why in Pasuk Beis, when Yaakov said to them after the famine intensified, Shuvu shivulonam atochel, so now you go back and get some grain, now they had to tell them the whole story. And the whole story puts them in a darker light, a more negative light. It wasn't just simply he wants to meet the family and then enjoy the pleasures of Egypt. I'll give you a tour guide. He said, don't come back without Binyamin. If you come back without Binyamin, you may not live, and certainly you'll never get your brother Shimon back. Now that changes everything. The different dynamics that Yaakov is facing. Now, Yaakov always suspected something. He had to, because he was a great chacham. He always suspected something was not right. He knew of the brother's jealousy of Yosef. He knew the dreams, of course, Raviv Shamar Sadavar. He knew exactly the issues, didn't know how to deal with it necessarily, when he saw the money in the bag, in the sack the first time, that is what clinched in his mind the idea that there's more to this story than they're letting on. Hema, they saw the money. Hema v'avihem v'airo. And then Yaakov became afraid, because now something is off. You may try to understate. You may try to act very casual about what happened. But the fact that you come back without one brother, and he's asking about your other brother, and now you get the money back as well, and you're accused of being spies, and then they see the money, Vayomer Elohim Yaakov Avihem, Osi Shikaltem. Then it all comes out. Because you've caused me to be bereaved, something is missing, something is off. Yosef Einenu, V'Shimon Einenu, Yosef is gone, Shimon is gone, V'Ez Binyamin Tikachu, you can take him too? No, I can't trust you. But Yaakov's response here is completely rational in the situation. And Osi Shikaltem doesn't mean that just I am bereaved. It means Shikaltem, you have caused me to be bereaved. There's something going on here that I don't know. And this Rashi relates to in Pasuk Lamed Vav. Osi Shikaltem Milamed Shechashadon. He suspected them. Shemaharguhu, O Micharuhu Ki Yosef. Maybe they killed Binyamin too. Maybe they killed Shimon too. Maybe they sold Shimon too. Something happened to Yosef, and something happened to Shimon. So I can't trust Binyamin with you. There's Binyamin Tikachu, Olai Hayuchulono. If that's the case, and the guilt is on my head, because now you've proven yourselves to be untrustworthy. You're not being completely open with me. He never accused them, by the way. Never accused them because they just deny it. And then what are you going to do? They know more than he knows. But he knew something was off. Yaakov here, right away, examined, as the Chacham does, the evidence that's before him, and he draws a rational conclusion. What's the evidence? They're guilty of something. I don't know what it is. They're guilty of something. These tragedies always seem to happen in their midst. Things go wrong that can't be anticipated when they're left to themselves, and therefore he's not going with you. We'll get back to Reuven and his offer in a moment, but Rabbi Chait quoted the Rambam that we've cited a number of times here. The famous Rambam in the Mor Nevochim, where the Rambam speaks about the three classes of evil that befall people. There are three types of evil in the world that people are subjected to. One, he says, is the evil that, so to speak, God does to man. Hit by a bolt of lightning, a hurricane comes, God forbid someone's stricken with illness, they didn't do anything, it just happens. That's an evil that God does to man, so to speak. And he said that's the smallest class of evil that exists. A larger class of evil is the evil that man does to other men, which is a good part of our world today. The evil people do to each other, all right? The criminal, the drunk driver, the thief, the cheat, etc. Those are ra'os that come into our world that affect us, God forbid, because of what other people do. But the Rambam says by far the greatest class of evil, the largest class of evil, is the harm, the evil that man does to himself. That's the greatest of all class. That's the largest class of evil, the evil that man does to himself. Situations in which we put ourselves in danger or harm, recklessness, and we suffer as a result. So we may look to blame others, but we suffer as a result. You know, just thinking the other day, you can't say these things out loud, really, but so much effort is being expended to find those people who got lost on Mount Hood, Nebuch. But you wonder why people are mountain climbing in the middle of the winter without any provisions and without means of communication. It's part of our world today. I think a similar thing happened 2 weeks ago, some other part of the country, I forget already. And one fellow, Nebuch, was already found dead. I don't know what they're doing with the others. Why do people put themselves in a situation whereby they endanger their lives? Because of the thrill of recovery, the thrill of overcoming that. It's an artificial thrill. sort of an extreme form of bungee jumping. I mean, if someone wants to go bungee jumping and the cord snaps, I don't have much rachmonis on them. Because the whole point is to give oneself the sensation that I'm about to die and now I'm going to live. All right? Now, why a person seeks that type of excitement is a corruption of the soul. That's a defect in the personality. Why we would need that type of excitement. But the world thrives on that. You have all these types of extreme sports today, and Nebuch people fall into all types of self-destructive behavior, whether it's drugs or drinking or all other... someone got killed where? Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. Someone was killed by his own snake. Yeah, why'd you have a pet snake? What's that? Right. Why would you keep a pet snake? It's the... Skydiving, correct. So, look, it's very thrilling. What can I tell you? But you have to weigh the risks again. You know, look, there's risk in any activity, crossing the street or driving a car. But you assume the risk when there's the potential for some benefit, some reasonable reward, like enhanced travel from one place to another, ease of travel. But when the reward is just an illusion, a fantasy of the mind, then what exactly are you seeking? That's the way the world is set up. So Yaakov listened to the Rambam, I'm sure. If troubles are befalling them, so they must have done something to bring this upon themselves. In other words, you had thousands and thousands of people at that time going to the Egyptian Empire to purchase grain, because they were Egypt was the only granary in the world, the only place where they had saved up their grain from the years of plenty, because of Yosef, of course, and they all went there. So the thousands and thousands of people went to Egypt. So Yaakov is saying, essentially, you expect me to believe that the ruler, the mashpir, questions everyone so intently. Everyone, he wants to know who their parents are, who their children are. You walk into a store to buy something, you have to get in a whole conversation with the cashier as to where the family, and I'm not giving you any more meat unless you bring your little sister with you. Who would think of such terms? So Yaakov already knows something happened. Something is going on. You did something to generate this type of suspicion. That's cause and effect. Something bad happened to you. Something bad always seems to be happening to you. My sons are falling by the wayside, one by one. When they're in your company, Yosef einenu v'Shimon einenu, v'ez binyamin tikachu. No, not on my life, alayhu yucholano. Yaakov was analyzing the situation that was before him and saying, right now there's no reason to change. Why? Because perhaps the Rav would end. If the famine ends, there's no reason to endanger a third son in your company. So that was the approach that Yaakov took. If you ask what was Yaakov's plan, that was his plan. Let's see what happens. Let's wait a few months, wait even a year. Let's see what happens. The famine might end as well. The famous line, one of my favorite quotations of Calvin Coolidge. He said, of 10 troubles down the road, 9 will fall into a ditch before you get to them. So wait. Sometimes the best response is do nothing. See what happens. Maybe it'll go away. Maybe something else will intervene. Maybe reality will present a curveball that changes the whole dynamic. And therefore the situation that you have suggested, which is untenable, need not come to pass. So Yaakov actually, faced with this crisis, responded very analytically, very rationally. He saw two things. One, evil is befalling evil people. That's the way of the world. And two, maybe the reality would change and the famine would end, in which case there's nothing left to do. In any event, I'm not going to risk Binyamin with you. Thus, he says, stop. Now we do nothing and we wait until we can investigate further. V'horo'ov kaved ba'aretz. Now something changed. The famine intensified. They ran out of grain, produce, and now they had to take into account, Yaakov had to take into account, this new situation. Vayikasher kilu lecholos hashever. They finished the grain that had they brought from Egypt, and Yaakov says to them, shuvu shivulotam adochel. Now, you know, go get some more. Now Yehuda adds a new fact. Vayomer lo Yehuda lemor ha'ed ha'id banu ha'ish lemor lo sirufa naibul techem etchem. Now they tell Yaakov, by the way, it wasn't as innocuous as we made it sound. The man had said, don't come back without Binyamin. Not that he wants to meet the whole family. Don't come back without him. And he said further, Im yeshcho mishalech esachinu itanu, if you send now our brother with us, ner dovin ishbol l'cha'ochel, then we'll go down and get more grain. If you're not going to send him, Yaakov, father, we're not going down, because we'll never come back. Because the man said, you're not going to see my face unless you bring your brother with you. Now it changes. Now Yaakov realizes that he was correct, that there was something else up. And he says, Vayomi Yisrael. Yisrael is no longer acting as Yaakov the father, but as Yisrael, head of the nation, and now someone who has to ensure the survival of his nation. Loma hariosimli. Now I want to understand. Why did you wrong me like this? Lagid lo ish ha'ud lochemoch. To tell the man that you have another brother. Because you'll notice again, in the psukim, all it says is, end of pasuk lamed, Vaiteno sono kimraglim esaretz, he construed us as spies, vanomere love, no, we said to him, kenim anachnu, loyinu miraglim, we're not spies, we're honest, ethical people. Shnei masar anachnu achim b'nei avinu, we're 12 brothers, all told. Ha'echod einenu v'katon ayom es avinu b'eretz kanon. The Yaakov is a good question. From the way they conveyed their conversation with Yosef, Yosef never asked them about Yaakov, nor did he ask them about the size of the family. It seems they volunteered that information. So Yaakov now says to himself, he's dealing with Tipshim. Why would they volunteer that one brother is gone and one brother is home? Why? Why are they endangering the rest of the family? Why? So he says, why did you wrong me to tell them he had another brother? So now they explain, no, it wasn't quite like that. Sha'ol sha'al ha'ish lanu. He asked us, and he asked us questions which to us were harmless. Ha'ud avichem chai, you have a nice large family, is your father still alive? Hayesh lochem och, is this the whole family, is there another brother? Vanaged lo al pi hadvarim ho'ele, all we did was answer his questions. We didn't volunteer anything. We didn't want to endanger anyone else. Hayadoa neida ki omar haridu asachichem. Did we ever think for a moment he would ask us to bring down our other brother? We never assumed that. The questions were innocuous. Pedigree, where are you from? How large is your family? Who's in your household? And we answered also innocuously. Hayadoa neida. Did we know he would ask us for more information? So now Yaakov, at least listening to the way Yehuda describes the conversation, sees at least he's playing with a full deck. And he's able to think clearly. And he's able to present, not completely honest, of course, but at least a more coherent explanation of what happened in Egypt. So now it looks like the ruler is a little capricious, a little arbitrary the way he deals with people. And maybe, you know, that's how the ancient and modern tyrants are. You can't always predict their behavior. They are wild cards. So now Yehuda's presenting this, and Yaakov is listening, and now Yehuda comes with a second offer. Now, what's the difference between Yehuda's offer and Reuven's offer? Reuven says in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Eshnei v'nai tamis em lo avieno elecha. You can kill my two sons, put them to death, if I don't bring Binyamin back. Reuven's suggestion was unworthy of a response, because as Yaakov realizes, and Rashi notes, Bechor Shotehu, my firstborn is a fool. Reuven is completely irrational. What he's saying, just makes no sense. It's unintelligible. What does Yaakov gain if his two sons die? So now he's missing Yosef. He's missing Yosef. He's missing Shimon. He'll be missing Binyamin. And now two grandchildren will be killed. So what are you adding to the mix? Why would I think that? Why would we even think that? That is something that can persuade. It's preposterous. Why did Reuven say it though? You see, what was Reuven's main character trait? You see, throughout his life, he's impulsive. He's impetuous. Pachas kamaim al tasar. Whatever he did was always impetuous. The Dudaim he brought to Leah, and with Bilha, and when Yosef was taken, Yosef was sold. You recall that Reuven wasn't there. Vayashav Reuven el Abor, it's Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk Chaftes. Reuven returned to the pit. Vinein Yosef Abor. Yosef's not in the pit. He tore his garments. And he said to his brothers, Hayelad Einenu, the boy is not here. Vani Ona Aniva. And now where am I going to go? Meaning, as the Mefarshim say, Rashi says, Ono Evrach Mitzaro Shel Abba. How will I flee from the pain of my father? In other words, Reuven said, how is this going to look? How will I be able to present this? I'm a Bechor. How will I be able to present to my father? What Reuven was concerned with, most of all, was appearances. Notice, he didn't protest the sale. He didn't say, how could you have done this? He didn't say it's unjust. He said, "V'ani ona aniva." How is this going to affect me? Reuven always responds emotionally, and that's why Yaakov saw, and the brachos and vayechi verify, confirm, that he's unworthy for malchus. He can't be a leader. He can't respond instinctively. You have to think. You have to be cautious. You have to analyze. You have to investigate. So Reuven was not like that. And that was the offer that he made here. What he said might have been hyperbole. We hope it was hyperbole. But if you just look at the substance of what he said, it makes no sense. Because nothing is gained by it. There's nothing that's going to attract Yaakov or make the situation more tenable. Yehuda's different. Yehuda comes with a different approach. And he says to his father, send him, v'nichye v'lo namus. At this point, we have no choice because we're lacking grain. We have to live too. In other words, Yaakov, this is the alternatives you have. Either we do nothing and we all die, or you send Binyamin and maybe one of us will die. Maybe he won't come back. Yehuda's not saying nothing is going to happen, but at this point, the two alternatives are each equally unpleasant. But one has to be chosen. Either we'll all die, vadai, or maybe something bad will happen. Bari v'shemo, so in this case, the bari is not good. You have something which is only possible, something definite, so you usually choose the definite, not the possible. Here the definite is not good. The possible, that's to be preferable. And then he says, Anochi arvenu, I'll guarantee him, miyadit v'vakshenu. You'll claim him from me. If I don't bring him back to you, I don't bring him back in a box, God forbid. He stands before you in good health. Then I will have sinned against you all these days. What is he saying? Unlike Reuven, who didn't really offer anything, Yehuda said, it's a personal obligation that I make to you. I guarantee it with my life, moreover, with my future. That is to say, l'olam habo, the world to come. Because if I don't bring him back, then it's on my head, and I will even sacrifice myself to be an eved, which of course we see next week's Sedra. By gosh, I love Yehudah. Yehudah's the one who protests Binyamin's capture. And he says, in fact, take me instead. Take me. You want an Eved? V'ato Yeshev na'avdecho tachas hanar Eved Adoni. Perek Mem Dal Pasuk Lamed Gimel, and that take me as an Eved. And Eved has no Olam Haba. Eved really has no Olam Haza either. And Eved is completely beholden to another human being. He has no life in this world, and he has no means of acquiring the next world. So Yehuda makes a guarantee for Yaakov, saying, I will assure his return, or in fact, my Olam Haza and my Olam Haba, bless you, is going to be subject to that that danger. Now Yaakov at least saw he could trust one son, Yehuda. Yehuda was in control of his emotions. Yehuda was willing to present a rational approach that in fact was underscored by selfless conduct. Now, Reuben didn't say, you can kill me, kill my two sons, because he didn't ask the two sons for their permission. What Yehuda said is different. He would have said, no, this is a moral, spiritual obligation that I maintain at the risk of my existence in this world and the next world. And Yaakov hears that, and then he adds the clincher, Kulayis Mamanu. Now it's becoming irrational to wait, because so much time has passed, we've tarried so long, but for that, Ki Atosh Shavnu Zeh Fa'amoyim. You would not have had to subject yourself, Yaakov, to these months of anguish and torment over Shimon, over Binyamin, over our future. We've been back and forth twice already. Yaakov hears that. He knows he's dealing with a chacham, Vayomer Alehem Yisrael Avihem. So now Yisrael again acting as the head of the nation to secure the nation. Im Kein Efo, if this is the way it has to be, meaning now there's only really one alternative, to do nothing, so this problem is not falling into a ditch. It's not going away, we have to act. If that's the case, then you have to act as Chachamim as well. Kechumizim, three things. Kechumizim Ras Oretz, you'll take the fruit of the land, Bechlechem, Varidul Ishmincho, you bring him a tribute, Matzarim, Advash, Nechos Velot, Batnim, Shkedim, bring him some nuts and almonds and honey and the Tuv Oretz. How is that going to impress you if he has everything? They have nothing. So the answer is, you'll be able to flesh out exactly what the problem is. If he really suspects you, if he thinks that you're spies, or he framed you, then a couple of peanuts are not going to change anything. However, if he's capricious, if he's just a despot who acts irrationally himself, behaves crazily at times, then maybe the tribute will soften him up. And you'll see that he'll see that you mean him no harm, and he'll respond differently. Yes?
So when the attack
to
famine, does that only designate grain?
Grain.
That's all.
Well, I imagine fruit didn't grow either.
Yes, because it's saying that there's a famine, and yet he's telling us to bring fruit and nuts
right.
And other things. So
right. Some say that they weren't affected by it, but the simple pshat is all the things they would bring are things that last a long time. Peanuts can last forever. All right? Honey can sit forever. So bring him some of our provisions that we have as an offering, even though it's not growing anymore, but this is what has to be done. So first you want to approach the ruler, the perspective that he'll be able to appreciate. Bring him something. Next, the Chesef Mishneh Kichuvi Yadchem. You'll take double the money. Money for the first time, money for the second time. V'es HaKesef HaMushav V'fiyam Techosechem Tashivu V'yadchem Ulai Mishgehu. Maybe he was just in error. Maybe it was a terrible mistake. Someone told me today that they booked the hotel online in one of the Caribbean islands for $4 a night. It was a computer glitch that was on the hotel website. And they booked it, and the hotel called them a few hours later, because apparently when it got out, there were massive bookings. And they stopped it after 5 or 6 hours, ordered a deluxe room, and they said, you can't have it. He said, hey, I booked, I paid, you have no choice. So all they did was downgrade him to a standard room. But in fact, he has $4 a night. So, ulai mishgehu, maybe you made a mistake. Maybe something's wrong in Yosef's computers down at the at the mashpir. That's the second thing. You'll pay him back. You see, you don't want to take anything. You're not looking for gifts. It was a mistake. You see how honest it is. It's the Kiddush Hashem. You know, one of the things Chazal say that you return money that you that a non-Jew incorrectly, mistakenly gave you. You say, I'm returning it. It's not mine. You know, you get the wrong change in the supermarket, and you give it back. There's no greater Kiddush Hashem. Most people want to pocket it and say, look, I got a windfall today. No, that's a Kiddush Hashem. Ulay Mishgehu. Maybe he made a mistake, and he'll see you're not spies, you're not devious, you're not conniving, you're not looking to cheat or deceive. You give it back. And thirdly, V'kel Shakai Yitain Lachem Rachamim L'fnei Ha'ish. And God should be with you. Now an appeal to Hashgacha, that without God on your side, meaning by side, before you go down again, do a little tshuva, because something is still up. So God should give you rachamim, v'shilach lachem es achichem acher, v'es binyomin, and he'll send you back your brother, v'shilach lachem es achichem acher, v'es binyomin, he'll send you back your brother, and binyomin as well. What about Yosef? So Rashi says here, notes the famous Chazal, that es achichem ze Shimon. Acher, the other. Ruach HaKodesh Nizrko Bo, the Rabbi Yosef, is inspired to say acher and leave it ambiguous. Acher, there's another brother too, without saying his name, there's Binyamin, and Binyamin as well, that we'll all come back. We'll be one united, reconciled family. Vani kasher shocholti shocholti. And I, as I was bereaved, I'll be bereaved. If it doesn't go right, doesn't go as planned, then there's no choice. This is what has to be, and we have no way of getting around it. This, in fact, that's Vani kasher shocholti shocholti, and that was it. It was the last conversation Yaakov had with them, until they come back in next week's Sedra, and he's told very gently, Od Yosef Chai, that Yosef still lives, V'chiyu Moshe Beretz Mitzrayim, and he in fact is the ruler in Egypt. And then everything starts to make sense, or at least a little more sense. But you see responses to crises. You see how the brothers respond, cover up, half truths, trying to shade the conversation and the negotiation to put themselves in the best light. But you see how Yaakov was able to expose it, to analyze it. He wasn't a youngster at this time, by the way. He was 130 years old, but with an intellect that was not dimmed at all. He was able to, without accusing them of anything, extract for them a little more of the story, be able to analyze and to investigate and to discover their flaws, make them think about their own imperfections and their own spiritual state, plan, devise a plan whereby they'd be able to appeal to the Moshe to get back in his good graces so the family once again will be whole, and in fact to effect what became the salvation of Yaakov's family, the revelation of Yosef to his brothers, and then Yaakov's arrival in Egypt and the beginning of Golos Mitzrayim. Okay. I thank you very much. Yes.